You're listening to After Hours by Red Compass Labs, the podcast where the best and brightest of the financial services industry let their hair down, unbutton their collars, and share what they really think about payments. I'm Mike Truter, Director of Digital Ecosystems and Innovation at Red Compass Labs, and in each episode, I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Julie Getter. Let's kick things off. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Mark Hartley as our special guest. Mark is currently CEO and co-founder of Bankify, which leverages the power of open banking to offer bank accounting from gig to big. With a long career in financial services, Mark previously served as Chief Innovation Officer for Clear2Pay, which was acquired by FIS back in 2014. As this is an after-hours chat, I hope everyone has brought along a drink. As I'm in Singapore and 7 hours ahead of you both, I'm probably slightly closer to socially acceptable drinking hours. Julie, are you on a hot tea today?
Absolutely. First one of the day.
And Mark, coffee to kickstart your morning?
Flat white.
Flat white, very good. Okay, let's get down to business. The format is simple. To add a bit of spice and spontaneity, Julie and I don't yet know the topic. Ooh, the anticipation. After Mark picks his topic from our vast list, without any script or preparation, we'll see where the conversation takes us. There's only one rule in this game, like the Scottish knife, the ski and do. We need to try and keep things short, sharp, and to the point. And now the moment we've all been waiting for. Mark, what topic would you like to tackle today from our list?
Drum roll. So I'm going to choose. You ready? Embedded finance.
Embedded finance.
Okay. Yeah.
Embedded finance. Great topic, Mark. So what is embedded finance? Should we start with a definition? I know it's something that that maybe a lot of people don't really understand. I don't know, Julie or Mike, would one of you like to cover off what embedded finance is, so that our audience can understand the topic in more detail?
So, I mean, I look at this from a perspective, the two perspectives. One is having financial service features inside a customer experience or a journey that is not necessarily, isn't related to financial services. So it might be a shopping experience, for example, where you have the payment at the end of that experience. But prior to that happening, you know, the user will have gone through a whole series of things from perhaps evaluating and researching on various different sites, understanding the products, doing comparisons, going onto a particular site, and maybe doing all of those things from that one site. And at the end, having made a buying decision, will make the payment, and the payment becomes part of this holistic experience. So it's embedding financial services inside customer experience without that being a particular financial services site. But from our perspective, there's also the flip side of that, where we talk about embedded banking. And that's where we are trying to persuade banks that actually for them to remain relevant, they have to have a much more holistic experience inside their own bank channel. So rather than it just doing the boring transactional stuff, they have to be able to do things that is meaningful to the customer. So in the context of the SME, that's helping them run their business. So do their invoicing, do their accounting and bookkeeping, do their cash forecasting, as well as the boring transaction stuff. So it's about having a more holistic experience that only part of it is financial services related.
Right. And the key is kind of joining them all together in that customer journey. So customer wants to do something. As they go through that process, then magically, you know, I think we've spoken before maybe about invisible payments. It's just part of the flow, and an invisible payment, the payment happens, but it's not the kind of feature anymore.
The feature, or it is a feature, but it's just part of a process rather than, and this is the thing, banks tend to think in bank silo products, you know, lending accounts, whereas we customers, people that run businesses, think in processes, and we don't think about making a payment. We think about, our supplier has sent us an invoice. We need to log that invoice. We need to put it in the bookkeeping. We need to pay it. Right. We need to match and reconcile. So we think in terms of process. Banks, regrettably, today think in terms of products, and more specifically, their products.
Yeah. So, Mark, what's next in this journey towards embedded finance and embedded payments?
So, like with everything, consumers are the testbed. So we see a lot of things that happen in the consumer world or the individual or personal world that then move into the business sort of B2B side of things, because, you know, all consumers all businesses have consumers within them. So you've seen some very interesting moves. So there's a lot of parties that are coming at this embedded finance scenario from a different angle. So if you take Shopify, for example, the well-known platform for creating your online retail presence, they've moved further down the chain. You can now get a bank account through Shopify. You can link your accounting package. So they're starting this embedded experience, this holistic experience from, you know, the creation of a shop. Whereas if you look at somebody like Stripe through their Atlas product, they're starting from the payment experience, but you can now through Stripe register and set up your business. So, you know, register that with the relevant authority. Mm-hmm. You can get a bank account, you can link your account. So they're starting the journey from creating your business end to end and running your business, but starting from a payments perspective. And then finally, if you look at the accounting package vendors, look at somebody like QuickBooks, who are starting from the accounting service. They've embedded payments that you can now open a bank account, a QuickBooks bank account, and they've even got, you know, invoice financing and discounting through a service provided by an organization called Fundbox. So they're doing absolutely everything that you need to run your business, and that includes lending. And if you think about what banks do, if banks don't wake up and smell the coffee and do the thing and start from the banking experience and do all the other things that Shopify and Stripe and others are doing, they're just going to be left as the expensive cost center. They're going to be left with no relationship with their customer, none of the value-added services revenue, and most importantly, maybe not even the lending revenue. And if a bank doesn't do lending, what does it actually do?
Yeah, it's empty, right? It's empty.
Just got deposits they can't use, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
In this area, it's very interesting because it's not direct competition. Like, you know, I'm going to challenge you, bank, on all your various segments. It's like coming from different angle. And then slowly, like, you know, the bank gets content, right? So it's interesting. So, Mark, like, where do you think, because banks need to react, right? They cannot remain still, as you mentioned. Otherwise, like they will lose their deposit. So where do you think I think we're seeing it in the US already, but where is the next step? Where will we see that happening, or where is the market?
I think you're seeing it all over the world, actually. You know, this problem is not unique to a market, and as with everything, you know, there are different starting points. So some of the you know, regulations that have happened in different parts of the world are making this easier for new entrants, but they're also making it easier for the banks, right? You know, the sharing data economy is out there and has been out there and is growing rapidly, and banks just need to start thinking about doing some different things. They seem to be completely wedded to the fact that all they do is banking. And if that's their attitude, then they're going to really struggle, right? So I think this is a mind shift in the boardroom and in different places to say, well, you know what? We can't just start or continue to offer banking services. We have to do some different things. Yeah. You know, so we have conversations all the time with, well, really, should we really be helping customers with their accounting? You know, they're worried about compliance, they're worried about the fact that they're regulated, they're worried about customers you know, complaining, they're worried about their reputational risk. They need to be worried about survival and market share and other things. So they need to start thinking that, you know, actually putting an accounting package inside your bank account isn't a big stretch. You know, it's the data is there. Most of the data in this world where electronic payments is now completely prevalent and cash is hardly used at all. All of the data that powers a bank account powers an accounting package. So is it really a big leap of faith to say banks probably should be white-labeling their own accounting package, or embedding, you know, invoicing services, or helping customers with cash forecasting? You know, we're not talking about, you know, banks suddenly starting to make coffee and manufacture, you know, aircraft. We're talking about things that they really are on the edges of. So it's not really a big leap of faith. They just need to be bold and do
it. I was going to say, in some jurisdictions, I know, you know, in the terms of their banking licenses, they can only offer these services in this way, right? And so, you know, some jurisdictions give a percentage of their business, which can be something ancillary to like their core services. Is that a problem, do you think, or do you think this is where that ecosystem and partnering is the key to unlocking those services? They don't have to build it themselves, but develop the ecosystem which allows them to deliver banking services under their banking license, but also offer a kind of wider choice by leveraging.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, it doesn't even need to be offer products, right? You know, this is about doing the normal things that you do. I know for people that use social media, you know, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, or for people like me who use a product called Strava, I'm big into my road cycling and you know, Garmin. You can link these products through API connections using, you know, a technology called OpenAuth 2. You don't have to be a distributor of these products necessarily. You just have to be a facilitator of the services. So we're not asking them to do something that is, you know, as you suggest, that encroaches on their legal rights to do anything other than offer banking services. It's actually just facilitating an embedded holistic experience that makes customers' lives infinitely more easy. And that's the issue, or the opportunity, I should say. It's about making business lives or personal lives infinitely more straightforward. So, you know, jumping around from one product to another and having all of the issues of single sign-in and remembering things and having to go from one experience to another, that's not what people expect anymore. People expect it to be from all one place. And just a point on the platform experience or the ecosystem, I think there's a big myth that banks can become the Apple App Store or the, you know, the Shopify of services. That's actually not what businesses want. I know from my own experience of running a business, I don't want to have to evaluate and choose from five different options as to which, you know, payments services provider I use, or which accounting package I use, or which invoicing service. I'd actually like someone just to give it to me all in one place, so banks can step up to the plate and say, there you go, it's all here, off you go. And that element of choice that consumers might require or need, I'm not convinced it's the same in the business world. I actually just think people want reduction in manual task, reduction in admin time, reduction in cost, ease and simplicity. So if a bank was to offer it all in one place, I think there's a lot of businesses that would bite their hands off.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So I think really, like, you know, what is kind of considered as table stake of a given is changing as well. So for example, like if you think of personal finance management tool, right? Few years ago, it was like, oh, Vault is doing this, amazing, and so on. I think now it's a given. And as a bank, you need to offer this in an embedded way. People do not want to do their accounting using Excel spreadsheets and so on, particularly for their personal one, or like when you are an SME, you don't have time for this, you know? So I think effectively, like for the banks that, for example, don't provide this, like, you're starting to seriously lag behind effectively, because again, this is now like something that by default people expect. So I think it's changing quite significantly. And I agree with you, Mark, when you say, I don't have time to look at it. Time is the number one issue of people. And especially when you are an SME where you need to do almost everything by yourself. So you kind of like don't want to and don't have time to understand this is the best accounting package. This is basically like the best tool to issue an invoice and so on. You just want everything in one place because, again, this is not the core of your business, right? So I think you're right when you say there will be a mindset shift that needs to happen and maybe some empathy that needs to be more demonstrated. Like if as a product manager in a bank, I'm thinking like, okay, I'm now an SME, what are my needs? Then that's a different, completely view of looking at things, right?
It is. And I think, you know, the table stakes, as you suggest, are the simple things that other parties are already doing, right? But, you know, if you're really going to go to game-changing relationships with your customers, then you have to do the table stakes. You have to earn the trust and the credibility. You know, if you go back to the examples that I gave and the different starting points from those parties, whether it be Shopify or Stripe or PayPal or the accounting package, they're all starting from different points. But the ultimate end game is that holistic service and experience, and you have the primary relationship with your customer. Banks are actually in the perfect position, right? Because all of those other parties generally have one thing missing, and that's the bank account. Right? And yes, certain parts of the world are making it easier for non-banks to have, you know, deposit-taking capability. But, you know, ultimately you run your business and you still have to make payments and you still have to get collections and people still have to pay you and you still have to have your money somewhere in an account, you know, and that is the ultimate glue. But if you don't do something with it, and again, in those areas where regulation has made it easier to connect your bank account and become a feed into somebody else's system, then again, you're just going to be that expensive place where money goes in and out, and the richness of the data is being exploited and used by another party to have the primary relationship with the common customer. And I just find it, I scratch my head and think, why if we can see this, why can't they? And why aren't they doing something about it more quickly? Because ultimately, if their payables and receivables disappear and their lending disappears, like I said earlier, what does a bank actually do if it doesn't do lending?
Yeah, I think it takes time. And I think to your point also, like, for me, there is two things. There is the account and there is also, like, the human customer relationship as well. Because at the end of the day, often, like, even when things are supposed to be smooth, sometimes it doesn't work as, like, you know, expected and so on. And I think, like, when you are in the position to actually talk to a human, when you contact your bank or, like, okay, maybe you may have a third filter, which is an AI, but very quickly talk to someone, it's helping quite significantly. So I think the account and the ability to deploy short of, like, you know, high quality customer services is also key, right? And
absolutely, yeah.
That's the bank
side. Yeah. And I think that's, again, maybe part of the quandary that's faced, right? Because it's a different thing to have your customer service representatives talk about your banking products, but it's a whole different thing for them to talk to you about your accounting and your P&L and your balance sheet and other things. But that's where I think, to Mike's point, relationships with partners that do understand those things become really, really important. And the easiest answer is always to say, no, we're not going to do that, right? Because that is just easy. That's not what your customers want, but that's the easiest thing to do. No, we're not going to do that because of X, Y, Z, A, B, C reason. And reality, I think, as we all know, is most of it's to do with cost. They don't want to do it because they think it'll cost too much and it'll eat into profit margins. Well, so will all the other things that happen if they don't do it as well. That'll eat into revenue and profit margin and all those other things. So, you know, and I think this is part of the problem. I think, you know, we've probably all discussed this previously. Is there enough pain yet? You know, are the billions of pounds, dollars, or whatever currency denomination that's being made by banks enough for them to make the right decisions now, and they worry very much about shareholder value and return on equity and all those other measurements. But that could change overnight or very quickly if they don't, you know, if they don't step up to the plate.
Mark, are there any good examples of banks that have kind of seen the light and are making moves towards, you know, changing their behaviors and investing in these areas?
Yeah, I think there are, but there are some, for me, there's some really me too plays as well. And I think I'll unashamedly name them. I think the HSBC Kinetic thing, the NatWest Metal thing, they are just very me too digital plays, which actually, I don't think they're really looking at how to address the SME issue at all. They're actually refreshing the tech stack of the bank. And actually it's been dressed up as a way of saying they're helping the SME customer, but realistically they're just putting a new end-to-end technology stack in. I think part of the problem is most of them don't really understand the challenges and the pain points that, you know, you have as a business owner and running a business. They look at it from a bank's perspective rather than from the customer's perspective. I think open banking has a really good opportunity to change that. And I think to embrace the, you know, the concept of data sharing properly, and it's not just in banking, it's in all aspects of sharing of data. You know, we really have the opportunity. I'd even go as far as to say, you know, the so-called champions of you know, small business banking in Tide, they don't actually necessarily offer the services. I mean, we launched a service recently around collections, a service called Incoming, which is actually in association with the Cooperative Bank. And what we're finding is lots of other banks' customers are downloading our app and linking their own bank account to our app, even though they don't bank with the Cooperative Bank, because it does the fundamental thing that every business owner wakes up and worries about, which is, has so-and-so paid me today? And it astonishes me that no bank in the UK other than the Co-op have actually put a collection service out for small businesses and micro businesses that is built around request to pay. And using open banking, not a scheme model like Pay.UK that requires each party payer and payee to be registered. So I don't think they actually understand the fundamental problems that businesses have. I'm much, much more worried about being paid than I am about paying. And I'm, you know, and some of them offer invoicing services. Well, if you offer an invoice, invoicing service, why the hell don't you offer a collection service as well? They just don't seem to get it. So I think there are some banks that do get it, and there are others that are doing bits of it, but no one's doing it holistically. No one's doing it holistically. Yeah,
I think it's interesting because, like, it's kind of coming back to what you mentioned in the past, right? The shift of mindset, and it's a bit like, you know, if you think of company in general, in the past they were thinking of customer, and caring about their customer brand and image, but not of their employee, right? And now it has kind of changed, and the employee brand is as important because it's bite you on the long run, right? So I think it's the same for banks when earlier you mentioned like they only care about shareholder, but actually some banks are starting to, like, you know, switch and be very much customer centric because they realize that, okay, yes, shareholder has like one stakeholder, but actually the customer is another stakeholder, which is like way more important, right? And I think then it's a matter of like moving into this direction, and all in all, the industry is known for being slow, right? So,
well, I think I'm sure there'll be people that listen to this, you know, this TV thing, bankers, and they'll just look at it, oh, you lot just don't get it, you know, and they'll just go, oh yeah, it's so much more about shareholder value and return on equity, and well, you know, that may be the thing of the past, right? I think there's certain things that a sense of purpose, just doing the right thing is the you know, from an ethical perspective, from a sense of purpose, it's really important. And I think one thing that COVID should have taught the whole of the world is actually just doing the right things, and the simple things and the obvious things are actually really, really important. And I think there's a mind shift in people who actually believe that that's the right thing to do. So, you know, shareholders are stakeholders, but they're, you know, I've always said, and I believe it firmly, that if you look after your customers and your employees, shareholder value looks after itself. You know, if you do the right thing, that just becomes a natural consequence of being successful. It isn't a strategy, should never be a strategy. You know, you shouldn't try and create shareholder value. You should do what's right for your customers or any employees, and that'll look after itself.
Yeah, so you want to grow the pie for everyone, right? That's the outcome, rather than splitting up. It's not a finite market, you know, where you're stealing from your competitors. Actually, make the market grow, or make everyone succeed, and everyone gets a slice of pie, right?
Well, that's absolutely the theory of any deregulation as well, and the fact of any deregulation, right? So open banking should absolutely do what you've just said. It shouldn't be something that they're frightened of, because ultimately it'll drive more usage and drive bigger opportunity. Yes, the market share of individual financial institutions might be less, but the overall market will be much bigger. So, you know, we've digressed from embedded finance and embedded banking into ethics and open banking, right? So it's good.
Yeah, but I think it's a great discussion, and you're right, but it all relates, right? So it might be a digression, but that's kind of why we're doing it.
It's a bit like embedded finance, Mike. It's all related, right? So you can't dissect ethics from open banking, from requests to pay, from embedded finance. It's all related, and you know it's all connected, exactly, and it all should be connected, because that's the way we run our lives. We don't run our lives in silos, right? We do for a reason and a purpose and an end game. We don't do things because that particular product does this and that particular product does that. It's all part of a joined up thing in life.
I think I agree with you, Mark. And to be fair, like to your point about like the notion of purpose, I think you face two factors, right? I think you're right. With COVID, there's been a leapfrog on this where like value is more and more important. But look at like some study about like Generation Z, they're all driven by value. Only like, you know, like for every purchase, they need to see like, you know, kind of what is the value of the company and so on to choose a provider. So it's becoming very much central to consider this.
Do you believe in the right things, right?
Totally. I mean, you know, we've been hiring a lot recently, and you know, we in the interview process, it's really interesting, you know, I spend far more time talking to potential applicants or potential candidates, I should say, that about the values of the company and what we do and why we do it. And I actually spend the first whole part of the interview doing that rather than even talking to them about what they're doing and why they want to join the business. It's all about value and purpose, Julie. You're absolutely right. And that's actually really refreshing, you know, because I think, you know, young people get a really bad rap about, you know, the way that they kind of think about things, and actually they're far more aware of really important things, and you know, and ethics and values is really it comes shining through when you speak to a lot of young people, which is really refreshing.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I think great discussion, and thank you both for walking us through this topic, a fascinating area. Mark, it's an absolute pleasure having you with us today. Thank you so much for joining our after hours chat. Again, great choice of topic. And I think one that's actively changing the future of payments for us and maybe the balance of power in the ecosystem and also driving that value, you know, to for everyone as we touched on. Thanks for listening to After Hours by Red Compass Labs. Search for After Hours by Red Compass Labs in YouTube for the video version of this series and much more. Give us a thumbs up, hit subscribe, and click on the bell to get notified when new content arrives. That's all for this episode. See you next time.